Hey everyone, welcome to The Restless Ones. I'm Jonathan Strickland. As always, my focus is on exploring the intersection of technology and business by having conversations with the most forward-thinking leaders. Throughout my career, I've covered everything from massive parallel processing to advanced robotics, but what truly inspires me are the stories of innovation and transformation. Today, I got to sit down and have a conversation with Cleven CEO Sander Sebastian Agur, and his story went in a different direction from what I expected. What if you identified a technological need, not just a business imperative, but a lofty goal that revolved around achieving significant technological innovation? And then, what if in pursuit of this, you zeroed in on a particular business case for the technology to serve as your company's mission? I think it would be fair to say that Cleven has followed such a path. But first, what is Cleven? It's a company that develops autonomous and teleoperated delivery vehicles intended to bring last-mile solutions to customers. Cleven developed both the hardware and the software needed to provide this service, and works with dozens of other companies to create vehicles capable of navigating public roads safely and efficiently. But these vehicles, while unmanned, aren't unsupervised. An operator can monitor a vehicle, or multiple vehicles, from a remote center of operations. To achieve this outcome, a lot of technology needs to be in place, including a robust communications network capable of sending information with very low latency. Clearly, Cleven's methodology is made possible largely thanks to advancements in wireless communications. I would chat with Sander about this and lots more in a great conversation. But to get started, I wanted to ask about Sander's own background, which would involve chatting a little bit about planes. Sander, I want to welcome you to our podcast, The Restless Ones. I'm very excited to have you on the show. I'm curious how you first got interested in technology in general.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting to be here. And I guess I started showing interest in technology actually in the early 2000s when my dad introduced me to airplanes. And I had the luxury to experience airplanes and aviation and how they operate, what systems do airplanes have on board. So I would say aviation showed me the way what technology is all about and what it can do. And ever since then, I've been interested not only in aviation, but different forms of technology, software, and hardware.
Yeah, and I am so tempted to just have a deep conversation about avionics and transponders. And in a previous life, I used to write documentation for airplane systems and about the layout of all the cabling and the various components within your typical aircraft. And I think it's an amazing education in technology in general, because not only do you learn about these basic components and how they all work together, there were so many other technologies that rose up in order to make it more efficient to create sophisticated aircraft. For example, augmented reality, maybe not a lot of people know this, but augmented reality really got a big start in learning how to lay out the cabling systems inside an aircraft chassis so that the people who were putting the aircraft together could see where they needed to lay the various components.
They are related. I mean, redundancy, duplicated safety systems, they all actually apply on autonomous vehicles as well. And we take great note of aviation, actually. And when we come to telesupervision and teleoperation, this is also something that the aviation industry is actually using, by having air traffic controllers who oversee a fleet of airplanes.
Well, that's an excellent point. You studied aviation management. You earned degrees in that. I'm really curious what your journey was like from the world of aviation toward solving last mile challenges in the delivery space.
First of all, both industries are super difficult. It's extremely difficult to run a profitable airline. And having come from the airline industry, I can tell you that a profitable airline is something that you don't see that often. And now we are pioneering autonomous vehicle industry. And it's as difficult as airlines. I mean, we are laying the bricks and we are putting down the foundation on which the new industry can really exist. abundance is vast and progress is gradual. Put them together and it will take you on a journey. And it's been a gradual journey so far, coming from the airlines, establishing one of the largest and first locker networks in Europe and in the US. And it's been a progress. So as new technologies emerge, we take note and we try to implement them and pivot and trial. And it's been a long kind of experiment, but finding profitable business models in the meantime and in between.
To that end, I would love to get your definition of the problem that Clevin aims to solve.
So Clevin is first and foremost a technology company focusing on autonomous driving systems technology. And the hardware we manufacture is an extension of the software. So I could say that we are combining the best hardware and software for a sustainable future, really, by building physical and digital infrastructure to make autonomous mobility a reality for industries worldwide. But we have to start from somewhere, and we have chosen the last mile space to be extremely underserved. It's one of the biggest cost elements for companies operating in the logistics space. Up to 60 to 80% of the last mile cost is actually labor-related cost. And at the same time, we have the shortage of drivers, ever-increasing volume of packages that need to be delivered. So we have chosen this space specifically because it's difficult and risky as well. So we see that if we solve one of the most difficult pain points in the logistics chain, then we have a really high likelihood of expanding that technology to different sectors. So we are keeping our systems in the inner city areas. The carriers are driving in a safe manner in neighborhoods, different communities, serving customers in a polite, quiet, safe manner. And I think this is really necessary to really get consumers acquainted with the technology, get them feel comfortable with new technologies. Mm-hmm. I think starting with the toughest task is somewhat risky, but it's also really rewarding if we do solve it.
This is fascinating. So I see this as the approach of defining a specific problem so that you can really focus your efforts, identify where the challenges are, where the bottlenecks are, and then engineer a solution to those. And from what it sounds like rather than the open sandbox where everything is a possibility, it makes it very difficult to focus on specifics. By identifying a very particular challenge, this last mile delivery, you have defined the context of what needs to happen. And from what you're saying, to me, it sounds like it's multifaceted. There's the technology side of solving that problem, but there's also the social side, getting the social buy-in for autonomous vehicles, which is its own problem. Then there's also, I imagine, the political challenge as well, making sure that you are able to meet with legislators and to achieve the agreement from them to allow those vehicles to operate on public roads. So it's a multi-pronged kind of challenge you're tackling.
Absolutely. There's no one who right now knows exactly what's right and wrong. We have decided that we, in addition to deploying the vehicles, we want to educate. We want to educate the communities. We want to educate the lawmakers and tell them what is realistic and what is not, what is safe and what is not. And we've been lucky to be actually the first company in Europe in 2020 that was allowed on the public roads with completely unmanned vehicles. And we take the same approach as we take with our customers when talking with authorities. Let's begin with a very simple test, very simple demonstration and showcase, and then gradually add more technology, add more autonomous driving capabilities. And once everybody is comfortable with that setup, we can go beyond and we can test more and more and show what the vehicles are actually capable of when they are given more permissions, basically.
Excellent. So we're talking about a combination of autonomy and teleoperation. I imagine that connectivity is an absolute foundational technology for your approach. In order to have this teleoperative control, you need to have something where you have no latency. If you are operating a vehicle on a public street and someone comes to a quick stop in front of you, the teleoperator needs to be able to respond in kind in order to avoid an accident. So can you talk a bit about how connectivity plays a part in the operations of Clevin at the stage you're at right now?
Connectivity is crucial for our services. We definitely need a wide network coverage, especially in the US. We've been really lucky to have a partnership now in place with T-Mobile. And this partnership enables us to expand rapidly in the States. So the big question always is, do we have the necessary latency to offer our services in a safe way? And the results so far are great. Our latency today is around 100 milliseconds, which is actually faster than any person who takes decisions in the real car. So I would say that our solution is actually as safe or even safer than any normal person driving on the roads. And by establishing those connectivity partnerships, we are partnering with the best-in-class wireless providers, and they are crucial to enable us to scale our mission to deliver the most reliable, safe, efficient, autonomous delivery platform.
Fascinating. With this approach to a marriage of teleoperation and autonomy, do you imagine that the future of autonomous vehicles will be a hybrid where there will be this communication outside the vehicle itself? Or do you think that we are going to focus more on an autonomous but fully siloed vehicle that's kind of its own computer?
The network that you're describing, that requires a lot of infrastructure investment. And it's not only one company that can achieve that. Mm-hmm. In this case, it would have to be a joint collaboration between connectivity providers, different technology companies that really make 5G and IoT technologies scalable as well.
Well, and that kind of is a great way to bring us back to the solving of the last mile, because as you mentioned, the last mile for delivery is the most difficult problem to solve. Can you talk a bit about some of the work that Cleven has done with various partners and how that has informed your approach to business and how that has evolved since the company was formed?
Sure. So we actually spent 4 or 5 years doing just silent R&D. No one knew about us, and we just popped up at the beginning of last year. That's when we launched our third generation vehicle. And since then, we've managed to actually sign up large amount of customers coming from both the logistics sector and retail as well. Because we keep our manufacturing side of things in-house, we are also capable of designing the exact vehicle that we want to use. And our vision was to have a really lightweight vehicle, something that you cannot get from any automotive OEM. And this has been well received by the US legislators as well. We fit nicely in a specific vehicle category. Mm-hmm. And that has gained us access to actually 5 states. And we are actually making the first steps to launch commercial services in the US. So we can already see from multiple use cases that we are not only matching the speed of delivery and the volume of delivery, but we are also making it more kind of affordable for our customers.
Excellent. Can you maybe go into a little more detail about those use cases?
Sure. We began testing with, for example, DHL Express at the beginning of last year. We were initially servicing DHL's own offices in the cities, but pretty quickly realized that we can actually go beyond and start servicing both B2B and B2C customers. So today we are actually driving, as we speak, on the public roads. We are delivering packages. We are in fact scaling the fleets as well. So it all began with just one simple test, one vehicle. And now we are expanding the fleets and thinking about expanding the operational domains and regions as well in Europe, going beyond Estonia, starting operations in France, in Germany. We just launched a delivery service in Harvest near Dallas, where we are working with a company called PostNet. We see great traction from many, but now for us as a company, it's the question of with whom we work and how much will we scale at this current stage, as we need to internally scale our company as well at the same time. So it's always this balancing act, how much we do and how fast we develop so that the company can actually keep up with the development.
When you're looking to scale up and hire more people, what are the skills that are most important to Cleven when you're out scouting for talent?
We are actually really unique company in a sense, as we have our own in-house university or academy, which we created a couple of years ago. So instead of going out and trying to find the talent, we are actually training young people to become mechatronics engineers, software developers, and that's all happening in-house. because even if we go out and try to find top talent, they necessarily don't have the practical experience. As I mentioned, the hardware is just the extension of the software. So we need people who can work with both hardware and software and understand how the hardware operates as well. And inside our company, we have the luxury of putting those two together. So the students who actually study with us right now, they have a really high degree of practical experience. And I would say that my ambition is actually to scale the university and education part even more in the future by establishing perhaps a US academy and bringing the know-how from Europe, from Estonia to the US. So I think what's lacking in the educational system right now is really the practical side of things. And I see that technology companies should be actually open to include students in their, you know, everyday work and life, and let them test and let them engineer on the physical product itself.
That's amazing. I think that's a really inspiring approach toward developing talent, because as we know, the skills you learn in tackling something like this, those are the same skills that are going to be useful in applications that go well beyond even autonomous driving.
Yeah. I think it's much better to upskill people who are interested in technology. And that way we get motivated, eager to learn people who want to contribute in reality. They're not just after the paychecks. We are giving our students like a quad bike to begin with and telling them that this quad bike needs to be remotely operated by the end of the course. And together with us, they are capable of achieving that, right? So that's how it goes, step by step.
I love that the vehicles themselves are these lightweight, smaller vehicles. I was also really interested in the fact that they are all electric vehicles. And I think that was a fantastic decision. Was that something that you had made a conscious decision early on, or was it driven by engineering needs, or was it a combination?
First of all, electric vehicles are, in our case, actually lighter than any combustion engine vehicles. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we saw the emergence of green cities and zero emission zones. So we wanted definitely to have an electric vehicle, which doesn't consume a lot of electricity. I can tell you that we only use 42 watt hours per kilometer, which is actually a super low figure. Any normal electric car would use 200-300 watt hours. So the cost of driving the vehicle should be really low. We can calculate that it's approximately a few cents per mile. And actually, it has been paying off, because we now proved and showed to the legislators and the government that we are small, nimble, we drive at really low speeds, we don't pollute.
And that kind of leads me to my last big question, which is, do you have any advice for business leaders who find themselves needing to work with local or even federal or countrywide legislators? What are the sort of approaches that you found to be really effective when you are dealing with people who aren't in the tech space, but they are in the legislative space, and it's their duty to protect citizens and landmarks and all of that?
I would say the most important thing is to establish a communication, a friendly communication line, and show that the technology is not a threat. It's actually beneficial for the communities. And that's only possible if you just bring the technology to them, demonstrate, let them test it themselves, and that way kind of gain more trust. We show them how we do it, why we do it, and let them be like part of the roadmap. Let them be in charge of deploying the vehicles and giving the permissions. Mm-hmm. In some cases, we allow the legislators to sit behind the wheel, take the wheel, try to teleoperate the vehicles, test the latency, test the ADS systems. And once they get the feel of it, they understand and they allow us to do more.
Before I could let Sander go, I needed to ask him one more thing. What's the best advice you have ever received?
I think it might come from my dad, who said that if you want to do something and you really believe in it, just do it first and then ask permissions later. The idea here is that if you start asking questions from the early on at the idea stage, then everybody will tell you that it's not possible. No, it's not allowed. It's not permitted. Technically impossible. But if you just take the leap of faith and do the MVP, then you have control and you have something to show. And if you have something to show, you can communicate that value to others. So begin with your belief in what you're doing and just do it as a first step.
Wow. Well, Sander, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I wish I could stretch it out longer, but I respect your time too much. Thank you so much for being on The Restless Ones.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan.
Thanks again to Sander Sebastian Agur for joining the program today. I admire the engineering-focused approach Clevin takes to business. Clearly defining a problem and then formulating a solution gets right to the very heart of engineering. And Sander's team have taken this philosophy beyond the technical requirements of creating an autonomous technology company. They use that same philosophy to identify pain points in getting social buy-in and in convincing legislators to allow vehicles access to public roads. The solutions may not always be as straightforward as swapping out one sensor for another, but defining the problem clearly goes a long way toward ideating a solution. And with Clevin's approach to teleoperating, the need for a robust communications infrastructure is obvious. It's only with access to high-throughput, low-latency connections that such operations are even possible. And meanwhile, we inch ever closer to a future in which autonomous vehicles can become a reality beyond the test cases. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Restless Ones. Be sure to join us for future episodes as I sit down with more thought leaders in the tech and business sectors. And be sure to check out our back catalog of episodes to learn how restless leaders aren't satisfied with doing something just because that's how it's always been done. Until next time, I'm Jonathan Strickland.